Okay, so it's February 27th, and we're looking at your operation of the God-given ability. And tonight we're going to start looking at the manifestation of prophecy. I want to cover the definition of the manifestation of prophecy, but also look at prophecy in general as it's used throughout the Bible. As look at the word prophecy, prophesy, prophet, and get a feel for all the different ways that it talks about prophecy and prophesying, because it's not just one thing. The manifestation of prophecy is a specific thing. You can't take everything about prophecy and apply it to this. You have to look at really everything that it says about prophecy and then see, well, what does it mean in this particular context? Because when we study the Word of God, we want to know what the word means according to its biblical usage or the way that it's used in the Bible. And there might be several different ways that a word is used in the Bible. And then you want to look at the context of the specific section that you're reading to see, okay, what does it mean here? What's the intended meaning so that we don't confuse one thing with another that doesn't belong? So we're going to look at the definition of prophecy and then look at prophecy the way it's mentioned in the Old Testament writings, and then the Gospels, and then Acts and the Epistles. And it's going to take a little bit of time, but that's okay, because this is a study night. This is not a class. A lot of this material might go into a class eventually, but right now we're just looking at it together, okay? So the manifestation of prophecy, the definition is the manifestation of prophecy is your operation of the God-given ability, whereby you may, in a believer's meeting, bring forth a message from or for God in a language of the people present. So this is what it means when we're talking about the manifestation that comes with the gift of Holy Spirit that was given on the day of Pentecost. It's God-given ability and it's your operation of it, so it won't operate you. God won't make you prophesy against your will. It's to be used in a believer's meeting, so it's confined to that environment as far as what we're talking about here. And it's to bring forth a message from God or for God on behalf of God, and it would be in your own language and the language of the people that are present. So to distinguish this from other meanings of the word prophecy, we want to really take a look at them all. So prophecy, in general, we'll see that it refers to words that are spoken on behalf of another. Usually it's a person speaking on behalf of God, the true God. But it could be, depending on the context of where you're reading, it could be that a person is speaking on behalf of a false god or an evil spirit, or on behalf of another person. And it could also be something that somebody speaks out of their own mind, but they attribute to God or to somebody else. Okay? It would still be called prophecy, even if it's not the genuine thing. So the context will tell you whether it is or not. But it's a declaration, and it can be a foretelling of future events, or it can be forthtelling or a declaration of things in the present, or even things in the past. Okay? So prophecy can cover past, present, or future. Of course, the manifestation of prophecy that we're concerned with will not be foretelling, it will not be giving information of things that couldn't be known by the five senses or from reading the scriptures, but prophecy in general can include all that. So let's start looking at the Old Testament writings and see how prophecy is used there. My first search is just on the word prophecy in the Old Testament. 2 Chronicles 9:29 is one of the few places that it uses the word prophecy, not prophesy, not prophet, but just prophecy. 2 Chronicles chapter 9 verse 29, and it's talking about Solomon the king and kind of summarizing his life at this point. It says, "Now the rest of the acts of Solomon, first and last, are they not written in the book of Nathan the prophet, and in the prophecy of Ahijah the Shilonite, and in the visions of Iddo the seer against Jeroboam the son of Nebat?" So there's no book in the Bible called the book of Nathan, is it? But it's very likely that Nathan the prophet wrote part of Samuel or Kings, okay? Because when we look for references to Ahijah the Shilonite and what he said, his prophecy, we'll find that in 1 Kings chapter 11. So let's go there. 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 29. So this is later on in Solomon's life when he had started worshiping other gods, or at least his wives, that many of the wives that he married, and he had hundreds of wives, and many of them worshiped other gods. They were from other places. And he built temples to their gods in Jerusalem, which really got God ticked off. And he sent a prophet named Ahijah to a man named Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, to let him know that he would be king. The kingdom would split north and south, and Jeroboam would be king over the northern kingdom of Israel. So we'll start in actually verse 28 here. It says, "And the man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor, and Solomon, seeing the young man that he was industrious, he made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph." That would be Ephraim and Manasseh, would be the two tribes that were from Joseph. "And it came to pass at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite found him in the way, and he had clad himself with a new garment, and they two were alone in the field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and rent it," or tore it, "in 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, 'Take thee 10 pieces, for thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon, and will give 10 tribes to thee. But he shall have one tribe for my servant David's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, because that they have forsaken me, and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Zidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in mine eyes, and to keep my statutes and my judgments, as did David his father. Howbeit, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, but I will make him prince all the days of his life for David my servant's sake, whom I chose, because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand, and will give it unto thee, even 10 tribes. And unto his son will I give one tribe, that David my servant may have a light alway before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen me to put my name there. And I will take thee, Jeroboam, and thou shalt reign according to all that thy soul desireth, and shalt be king over Israel. And it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and wilt walk in my ways, and do that as right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and build thee a sure house, as I built for David, and will give Israel unto thee. And I will for this afflict the seed of David, but not forever." That was the prophecy. Okay? Now, was it edification, exhortation, and comfort? There was exhortation in there, but it was foretelling, right? It was instructions to him. It was information to him. And it was information of what would happen. So this prophecy was not given by just inspiration, but it would have been by word of knowledge and word of wisdom, right? Information that he wouldn't know by his five senses, information that would not have been in the scriptures, and information that would tell him not only what to do, but what would happen. So this prophecy would have been by revelation, not by inspired utterance, you see. But it's the first place that the word prophecy is used in the Old Testament. Now, there are a few others. The word translated prophecy is the word nebuah in Hebrew, and it's only used 3 times, this Hebrew word. There are other forms of the word for prophesy and for prophet, but as far as prophecy, it's only used 3 times. So the second place that it's used, 2 Chronicles 15, verse 8, it's regarding Asa, who was the king of Judah a number of generations after Solomon. It says, "And when Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Oded the prophet, he took courage." Now, to find out what the words were that Oded spake, we have to go back to the beginning of the chapter and see what he told them. What was the prophecy of Oded? Starting in verse 1, it says, "And the Spirit of God came upon Azariah, the son of Oded." Okay, he was actually the son of Oded, but it refers to him as Oded in verse 8, but it says he was Azariah, the son of Oded. "And he went out to meet Asa and said unto him, Hear me, Asa." So just this man talking to the king. "Hear me, Asa, and all Judah and Benjamin. The Lord is with you while ye be with him. And if ye seek him, he will be found of you. But if ye forsake him, he will forsake you. Now for a long season Israel hath been without the true God, and without a teaching priest, and without law. But when they in their trouble did turn unto the Lord God of Israel and sought him, he was found of them. And in those times there was no peace to him that went out, nor to him that came in, but great vexations were upon all the inhabitants of the countries, and nation was destroyed of nation, and city of city, for God did vex them with all adversity." Verse 7, "Be strong therefore, and let not your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded." So that was the prophecy of Azariah, the son of Oded. Okay? Now, I don't see in this message anything that would have had to have been by revelation that couldn't have been known. He was telling him things that had taken place, and that if you seek God, you'll find him. If you forsake God, he'll forsake you. Those are things that are written in other places in the Old Testament. So this may have been inspired utterance, but it would have been by revelation for him to speak to the king. He's not in like a believer's meeting setting. He's talking to the king and addressing the one person rather than speaking unto men, edification, exhortation, and comfort. So again, there's still a difference between this prophecy in Old Testament times and the prophecy that it's talking about in 1 Corinthians. But here is the result of this. So the king heard it, and he could say, what do you know? You know, you're nobody. But in this case, he listened to him. And it says, "When Asa heard these words and the prophecy of Oded the prophet, he took courage and put away the abominable idols out of all the land of Judah and Benjamin, and out of all the cities which he had taken from Mount Ephraim, and renewed the altar of the Lord that was before the porch of the Lord. And he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and the strangers with them out of Ephraim and Manasseh and out of Simeon. For they fell to him out of Israel in abundance when they saw that the Lord his God was with him." So a lot of people from the northern kingdom defected from there and came down to the southern kingdom because they saw God was at work here. Pretty cool. So that was the prophecy of Oded. Let's see what else we can find about the word prophecy here. Let's go to Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 12. Now, Nehemiah was in Jerusalem after the Babylonian captivity was over, and God sent people back to Jerusalem. The king, Cyrus, permitted people to go back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, which had been done at this time, and then to rebuild the wall of the city, which had been broken down. So the city was without its former defenses. So Nehemiah was in charge of the job of building the city wall around Jerusalem again. And in chapter 6, the verse where it uses the word prophecy is in verse 12, where it says, "And lo, I perceived that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him." So we need a little context to see what it's talking about. So let's go to verse 10. Okay. So prior to this, some people had tried to make him afraid, saying, "It's come to the attention of the king that you're building a wall around the city, and he's going to take that as defiance against him, and you're going to be in big trouble." They tried to make him afraid so that he would discontinue the work, but that didn't intimidate him. It kept on going. And then in verse 10, it says, "Afterward, I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabeel, who was shut up, meaning he was in a locked room. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple that had recently been rebuilt, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee. Yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. So he said, you and I, we should go into the temple, close the doors, and hide there. Verse 11, and I said, it's Nehemiah talking now, should such a man as I flee? And who is there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. And lo, I perceived that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat, who were two of his enemies, had hired him. So they called it prophecy because he claimed to be speaking for God. Okay? He was giving them a warning as if it was came from God and told them what to do, go hide in the temple. But he didn't fall for the trap because he realized, hey, if they come and find me hiding out, they're going to say, okay, he must have done something wrong because he's hiding, right? Trying to save his life. He said, I'm not going to do that. And he realized that what seemed to be prophecy was actually words that were given to him by his two enemies, Tobiah and Sanballat. So he was still speaking for another, but he wasn't speaking for God in this case. But they still called it prophecy. See that? Now, there's a couple of other places where it uses the word prophecy, at least the English word prophecy, but it's a different Hebrew word. There's one in Proverbs 30, says the words of Agur, the son of Jakeh, even the prophecy, but it's the word masa in Hebrew, which means a burden, okay? And sometimes prophets would say, the burden of the Lord, something God's given me to carry and to speak, okay? I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at those, but I want to look at the word prophesy, and I'm going to... To get those, I'm just going to P-R-O-P-H-E-S and do a partial search in the Old Testament. That should give me all the places where it says prophesy, prophesied, prophesieth will all be included there. So you can spell a word up to the point where there could be various endings and then do a partial match. And it's a good way to do a search of a word like this. So Numbers 11 is the first one mentioned where people prophesied. And let's go to Numbers 11. This was the time where the people of Israel, they're in the wilderness with Moses, and they're just complaining. And it's getting to Moses at this point. Moses speaks to God in verses 11 to 17. So you get an idea of what's going on here. Prior to this, it talks about the people complaining about the food and longing for the days where they were in Egypt, and they had all the different things that they could eat there. And in verse 11, Moses said unto the Lord, wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? Wherefore meaning why? Why have you done this to me? Wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I conceived all this people? Have I begotten them, that thou shouldest say unto me, carry them in thy bosom as a nursing father beareth a sucking child unto the land which thou swearest unto their fathers? Whence should I have flesh to give unto all this people? For they weep unto me, saying, give us flesh that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of hand. Just kill me. I'd be much happier if I have found favor in thy sight, and let me not see my wretchedness. And the Lord said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom thou knowest to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there, and I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. And then he also told them how he's going to provide flesh for them to eat. So we'll skip down to verse 24. And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people and set them round about the tabernacle. And the Lord came down in a cloud and spake unto him and took of the spirit that was upon him and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. Now, the word cease here means to add, increase, or do again. So it should really read, they prophesied and they did not do it again. They prophesied at that one time, but that's the only time that they did it. And if you look at some of the other translations, like the Revised Version, it says, and the Lord came down in the cloud and spake unto him and took of the spirit that was upon him and put it upon the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied, but they did so no more. Okay? A lot of the translations read it that way. But anyway, they prophesied. Now, it doesn't say what any of them said when they prophesied. It just says that they did. And we know that the result of it is that Moses continued. It must have given him great encouragement to have 70 others with spirit upon them that were able to prophesy. And again, it doesn't tell us what they said, but it must have been words of encouragement because Moses was able to continue after this. Okay? But it took spirit being upon them, and they prophesied. Now, let's look at 1 Samuel. This is very interesting regarding King Saul. 1 Samuel 10. This is a time where Saul, before he was king, was in charge of his father's donkeys or asses, you know, calls them asses in the Bible. And they were lost, and his father sent him out to find them. And they looked all over the place, and he and his servant that was with him, they decided to ask the prophet Samuel if he could help them find the asses. So they went to Samuel, and Samuel told Saul, you are going to be king over the nation of Israel. He was the first anointed king of Israel. And he anointed him. In verse 1, it says, and Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head and kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? And then he told him that the asses were already found. And he gave him some instructions. And we'll start in verse 3. It says, then shalt thou go on forward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shall meet thee three men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying three kids, little goats, and another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee and give thee two loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hands. After that, thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of the Philistines. And it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and a tabret and a pipe and a harp before them, and they shall prophesy. So these prophets, and there'd be a group of them, they would prophesy with musical instruments. So they'd be playing music and prophesying. And the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shalt be turned into another man. So it's going to change you. The Spirit of God on you is going to change you like you're another person. And let it be when these signs are come unto thee that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. And he gave him some other instructions. And verse 9 says, and it was so that when he turned his back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart. And all those signs came to pass that day. And when they came thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets met him, and the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. And it came to pass when all that knew him before time saw that, behold, he prophesied among the prophets, then the people said one to another, what is this that is come unto the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets? And one of the same place answered and said, but who is their father? Therefore, it became a proverb, is Saul also among the prophets? And when he had made an end of prophesying, he came to the high place. And his uncle asked what happened, and he didn't tell him anything. He didn't want to tell anybody that he had been anointed to be king or that he had prophesied with the prophets. But let's go to chapter 16. In chapter 16, Samuel had anointed Saul. He had become publicly recognized as king, but Samuel had told him to do some things that Saul failed to do. God was very disappointed in Saul that he was not obeying his instructions, and he told Samuel, we're going to choose somebody else to be king. Turned out to be David not long after this. But look at verse 14. It says, but the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him. Now this, as it's written, can be a troubling verse to a lot of people, saying, how can there be an evil spirit from the Lord? The best I can figure is this. The word from is translated from two words, min, which means from or out of, and the other word eth, which means near. So an evil spirit from near the Lord. The best I can understand this, it was an evil spirit from the heavenly realm. You know, God is in heaven, and, well, so is the devil. People think that the devil is underground in hell, but it doesn't say that. It says he's the prince of the power of the air, right? So an evil spirit from near the Lord troubled him. It actually came from the devil, but often they would, in the Old Testament, they did not attribute things to the devil because they'd rather not even mention his name. But it was an evil spirit. It wasn't from God directly, but from near the Lord. But it troubled him. It troubled Saul. And Saul's servants said unto him, behold now, an evil spirit from God troubleth thee. Let our Lord now command thy servants which are before thee to seek out a man who is a cunning player on an harp. And it shall come to pass, when the evil spirit from God is upon thee, that he shall play with his hand, and thou shalt be well. So he said, yeah, go find somebody. And they found David, the son of Jesse. And he went to Saul, and any time Saul had this evil spirit upon him and he was troubled, they'd get David to play and to sing for him. And he was all right. Okay, we'll read this in verse 23. It came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him. Okay, now look at chapter 18, verse 10. So this evil spirit would come and go. The Spirit of God had been taken from him because he wasn't obeying God. And in Old Testament times, it was not the new birth spirit. It was not a permanent thing. God could put it upon somebody. He could take it off. So he had put it upon Saul, but he had taken it off again. And in the absence of the Spirit of God, this evil spirit was troubling him from time to time. Now, in between this, you know, David had fought Goliath and had become captain of the army of Saul, and Saul knew from Samuel that there would be another that would be chosen to be king, and he figured out that David is probably the guy. Look in verse 8. Saul was very wroth when people attributed, Saul hath slain his thousands, like it says in verse 7. When they came back from the battle, it says, the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, they have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward. It's like, I've got my eyes on you. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house. And David played with his hand as at other times, and there was a javelin in Saul's hand, and Saul cast the javelin. For he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided out of his presence twice. He had to duck so he didn't get hit by the javelin. But notice in verse 10, it says that the evil spirit came upon Saul and he prophesied. So this evil spirit gave him words to speak that were not words from God. But it still uses the word prophesied because Saul is speaking on behalf of another, in this case, the evil spirit. You see that? But it still uses the word prophesy to describe that. Just want to show you these things so we can see that prophecy in the Bible as a whole covers a lot of ground. One person speaking for another, for God, for an evil spirit in this case. We'll see that there's some other things too. But there's another neat thing regarding Saul I want to show you in chapter 19. I think this is kind of amusing. But David left Saul's palace and he was on the run and was hiding from Saul because Saul kept trying to kill him. And in chapter 19, verse 19, it says, "And it was told Saul, saying, Behold, David is at Naoth in Ramah. And Saul sent messengers to take David, to grab him, drag him back to Saul where he would execute him. So Saul sent messengers to take David, and when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying and Samuel standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied." So at this point, David had joined with Samuel in Ramah, as one of the places where Samuel was known to hang out. So David and Samuel are together, and there's this company of prophets, like the one that Saul had originally joined after he was anointed to be king. So you have David and Samuel and this company of prophets, and these prophets are prophesying, and the messengers that Saul sent to grab David, they started prophesying. Because God put his spirit upon him and had him prophesy. And when it was told Saul, he sent other messengers. And they prophesied likewise. And Saul sent messengers again the third time. And they prophesied also. So everybody that Saul is sending to grab David, they wind up getting the Spirit of God upon them. And God gives them words to say in prophecy. Then went he also to Ramah and came to a great well that is in Seku. And he asked and said, "Where are Samuel and David?" And one said, "Behold, they be at Naoth in Ramah." And he went thither to Naoth in Ramah, and the Spirit of God was upon him also. Okay? God had taken it from him, but at this time he put it back on him, at least temporarily. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naoth in Ramah. And he stripped off his clothes also and prophesied before Samuel in like manner and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets? Now, when it says he'd stripped off his clothes and lay down naked, naked can mean either totally naked or just have your underclothing on. So in this case, Saul took off his kingly robe and probably took off his crown and just prophesied as a man with the Spirit of God upon him, because the Spirit of God was upon him. God could talk with him. God could say, "Okay, Saul, here's what's going on. Now, you say this before Samuel." And he said what God gave him to say. And he was in his right mind for a short period of time. After that, the Spirit of God left him again. But I thought that was interesting. That's one way that God protected his guys. And God can do that. So, let's go to 1 Chronicles 25. So, in 1 Chronicles 25, verse 1. There's a number of chapters that talk about David as king, assigning responsibilities to the Levites, including all the Levites, and then the sons of Aaron, and then the musicians, and Asaph. You might have heard, you know, Asaph, is some of the psalms were by him, and Heman and Jeduthun also. But in verse 1 it says, "Moreover, David and the captains of the host separated to the service of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun, who should prophesy with harps, with psalteries, and with cymbals. And the number of the workmen according to their service was," and it lists of the sons of Asaph. Not going to read that whole verse, it's a lot of names. But verse 3 of Jeduthun talks about his sons. But look, the second half of the verse here, "under the hands of their father Jeduthun, who prophesied with the harp to give thanks and to praise the Lord. So part of the job of these Levites, the specific family of Levites, you know, just within the whole tribe, there were individual families, and Asaph, Heman, and Jeduthun, their families, their job was to prophesy with musical instruments, okay? They would sing songs, but some of these songs would be songs that would be inspired on the spot, apparently. They would be prophesying to music, which is kind of cool. But that's what they did. Now, 1 Kings 18, I'm going to show you some people prophesying on behalf of a false god. This is the chapter where Elijah the prophet, after he had prayed that it wouldn't rain for 3.5 years, shows up to King Ahab in Israel, and they have this big showdown between him and the prophets of Baal. And there were, I believe, 400 prophets of Baal and another 450 prophets of the groves. But he said, you take a bullock, like an ox, cut it in pieces, put it on an altar, and call to your God, call to Baal, and see if he'll bring fire down from heaven to burn up the sacrifice. I'll do the same thing with my bullock, okay? So, skip down to verse 25. It says, and Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves, and dress it first, for ye are many, and call on the name of your gods, but put no fire under. And they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal, from morning even until noon, saying, O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice, nor any that answered. And they leaped upon the altar which was made. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he's a god. Either he's talking, or he's pursuing, or he's in a journey, or peradventure he sleepeth and must be awaked. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them. And it came to pass when midday was past, and they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice. And there was neither voice nor any to answer, nor any that regarded. So they prophesied for a long time. They're speaking on behalf of their God. First they cried unto him, and now they're speaking as if Baal is responding, but they're getting no fire come down from the sky. Okay? Then Elijah does his thing, you know, pours water on it 3 times, and then a simple prayer, and boom, fire comes down and burns it all up. But anyway, I just want to show you that they prophesied as if, you know, they're speaking for their God, for Baal. Not for the true God, but for Baal that they considered God. Look at Jeremiah, please. Chapter 14. Jeremiah 14, verse 14. During the time of Jeremiah, there were many prophets that were not prophets of the true God, but claimed to be. Okay? They claimed to be speaking for God. Now, God singled out Jeremiah, told them that he made him a prophet, gave him words to speak, and they were not good news, because the people of Jerusalem and Judea, they were worshiping other gods, the Queen of Heaven and other gods that they were praying to. And Jeremiah warned them, but they wouldn't listen to him. So it came to the point where God said, I'm done with these people. The curse of the law is going to come upon them. The Babylonians are going to come and destroy the city. There's going to be famine and a sword, okay? And he talks about the prophets that prophesy lies in his name. But go back to verse 11 to get a running start on this. Then said the Lord unto me, pray not for this people for their good. When they fast, I will not hear their cry. And when they offer burnt offering and an oblation, I will not accept them. But I will consume them by the sword, and by the famine, and by the pestilence. And he had previously explained that this is because they're not worshiping me anymore, they're worshiping other gods. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, the prophets say unto them, ye shall not see the sword, neither shall ye have famine, but I will give you assured peace in this place. So all these other prophets besides Jeremiah are saying, no, you will not see the sword. There will not be famine. I will give you assured peace in this place. Doesn't that sound beautiful, comforting, heartwarming? What's the problem with it? Look at verse 14. Then the Lord said unto me, the prophets prophesy lies in my name. I sent them not, neither have I commanded them, neither spake I unto them. They prophesy unto you a false vision and divination and a thing of naught and the deceit of their heart. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, concerning the prophets that prophesy in my name, and I sent them not. Yet they say, sword and famine shall not be in this land. By sword and famine shall those prophets be consumed. And the people to whom they prophesy shall be cast out in the streets of Jerusalem because of the famine and the sword, and they shall have none to bury them, their wives, nor their sons, nor their daughters, for I will pour their wickedness upon them. So even though it sounded good, it wasn't words from God. They made it up out of their own head. Why would they do that? Well, one reason is the king looked favorably upon those that prophesied good stuff about him. Jeremiah was put in prison in the dungeon because he prophesied that the Babylonians would come and wipe out the city and destroy it. The king didn't like that. He loved what the other prophets were saying. So these prophets were being supported by the king. They're going to say things that the king wants to hear. They're going to say things that the people want to hear. The only problem is they're saying that God said so and God didn't say so. That puts them in big trouble, you see? But again, Old Testament times, there's a lot of stuff that went on. Now, when you look at the word prophet, Genesis 20 is the first place where you have the word prophet in the Bible. And it's regarding Abraham. Chapter 20, verse 7. This is where Abimelech, the king of Gerar, took Sarah to be his wife because Abraham had said, oh, that's my sister. And God appeared to Abimelech in a dream and talked to him. And in verse 7 it says, now therefore restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet. Now remember, the word prophecy was nebuah. The word prophet is nabi, kind of a different form of the same root word. So restore the man his wife, for he, Abraham, is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. So Abraham was singled out as a prophet. Exodus chapter 7. This tells you what a prophet is. Remember, God appeared to Moses in the burning bush and told him to go to Egypt and speak to Pharaoh to let the people come out of Egypt. And Moses had all these objections, one of which is, I'm not good at speaking. And God said, well, I know your brother Aaron can speak well, and I'll have him be your spokesman. I'll tell you what to say. You tell Aaron, and Aaron will talk to Pharaoh. And in explaining this in chapter 7, verse 1, it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, see, I have made thee a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron thy brother shalt be thy prophet. Thou shalt speak all that I command thee, and Aaron thy brother shall speak unto Pharaoh, that he send the children of Israel out of his land. So the prophet is one who speaks for another, right? The one person gives the prophet the words to speak. The prophet speaks it to the intended audience, whether it's one person or a group of people. Chapter 15. This is right after the Red Sea victory. They crossed the Red Sea. Egyptian army was drowned. And Moses sang this song. God gave him a song to sing. And Moses sang it before all the people. And you can read the words of the song if you want, but we won't take the time to do that. But down in verse 20 of chapter 15, it says, and Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, also the sister of Moses, okay? She was a prophetess. That's a female prophet. So a woman could also be a prophet of God. There was another one named Deborah later on in the book of Judges. But Miriam The prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took a timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, "Sing ye to the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea." Numbers chapter 12. At this point, Moses had taken another wife, who was an Ethiopian woman. And in 12:1, it says, "And Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. And they said, Hath the Lord indeed spoken only by Moses? Hath he not spoken also by us? Because we are also prophets." And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. And the Lord spake suddenly unto Moses and unto Aaron and unto Miriam, "Come out, ye three, unto the tabernacle of the congregation." And they came out. And the Lord came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came forth. And he said, "Hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream. My servant Moses, not so, who is faithful in all mine house. With him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, and not in dark speeches. And the similitude of the Lord shall he behold. Wherefore then were ye not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" So God put Moses in another category all by himself. He would speak to Moses in a way that he wouldn't speak to other prophets, with the other prophets, a vision or a dream, but to Moses, just like a man speaks to his friend. Pretty cool. Now, Deuteronomy 18, in verse 9, is Moses telling the people of Israel some final instructions before he fell asleep. He said, "When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer." So no mediums, no fortune tellers, no witchcraft, no wizards, no Harry Potters, no wicked witches of the West, no good witches of the north, you know, none of that. "For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord. And because of these abominations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. Thou shalt be perfect with the Lord thy God. For these nations which thou shalt possess hearkened unto observers of times, like astrologers, and unto diviners. But as for thee, the Lord thy God hath not suffered thee or allowed thee to do so. The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee, of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him ye shall hearken." That's talking about Jesus Christ. "According to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God in Horeb, in the day of the assembly, saying, Let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not." Because God spoke to them audibly with the mountain on fire and smoke, and the people got terrified, and they told Moses, "You go up there, talk to God, come back and tell us what he said, and we'll agree to whatever he says." So that's what he's referring to there. "And the Lord said unto me, They have well spoken that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, Moses, and will put my words in his mouth. And he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him." Again, that's talking about Jesus Christ. "And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. But the prophet which shall presume to speak a word in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or that shall speak in the name of other gods, even that prophet shall die." Like the prophets at the time of Jeremiah, the prophets of Baal, you know. "And if thou shalt say in thine heart, How shall we know the word which the Lord hath not spoken? When the prophet speaketh in the name of the Lord, if the thing follow not nor come to pass, that is the thing which the Lord hath not spoken, but the prophet hath spoken it presumptuously. Thou shalt not be afraid of him, or have no respect for that prophet, because he's making stuff up and saying God said so. One other place I want to go to is Joel 2. Joel chapter 2, and this will be familiar to you. Joel 2:28, because this was quoted by Peter on the day of Pentecost. Everything we've seen so far is prophecy as it was in Old Testament times, either with the Spirit of God upon people and they received the words to speak by revelation, or people pretending to prophesy, people speaking for somebody else or for another god, or saying they're speaking for God when they're really making stuff up. But Joel is now going to speak of something else that's coming. Verse 28, and it shall come to pass afterward that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Not just the prophets, okay, but everybody, your sons and your daughters, everybody that receives this spirit that I'm going to pour out shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. And also upon the servants and upon the handmaids in those days will I pour out my spirit. Okay, now that's talking about what came on the day of Pentecost. So next week, we're going to look at the Gospels and see what's mentioned about prophecy or prophesying there, because there are some things. And then we're going to look at what's in Acts and the epistles regarding prophecy, and then focus on that manifestation of prophecy that God has given us as one of the God-given abilities that comes with the gift of Holy Spirit. Okay? That's all for tonight.